Last year, the U.S. Mint launched the American Women Quarters Program, a batch of coins to be produced across 4 years, featuring women who have played a shaping role in American history. The first quarter in the series carried the likeness of Maya Angelou. Other women who will be featured include Sally Ride, actress Anna May Wong, suffragist and politician Nina Otero Warren, Bessie Coleman, the first African-American and Native American female licensed pilot, and Wilma Mankiller, the first female chief of the Cherokee Nation. With her coins printing in 2022, Maya Angelou became the first black woman to appear on U.S. federal currency. The image of her on her quarter shows her with arms lifted to the sky in a gesture of liberation and surrounded by symbols of freedom that she herself painted so beautifully in her literary works, a bird taking flight, the rays of the sun breaking through. And many people spoke about the power of this image as redefining freedom in our collective imagination and letting us step into a richer meaning through lifting up her legacy and her experience. During the Obama presidency, a 9-year-old girl named Sophia from Cambridge, Massachusetts, wrote a letter to the president asking why there weren't more women featured on US money. As she put it, there are lots of women who could be on coins or dollars in the United States because of the important things they've done. President Obama allowed us how he agreed. Sophia made several suggestions, and he took one of them, promising that Harriet Tubman would be featured on the $20 bill, replacing Andrew Jackson. And things seemed to be moving along toward that goal at the Treasury, but then another election happened, and a different president and cabinet were elected. So the move was delayed for reasons that weren't entirely clear. It was pushed back, and the announcement was that Harriet Tubman's likeness wouldn't appear on bills until at least 2026. Well, one church, Hope Central Church in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts, just down the road from Sophia, who had the original idea. And actually, Hope was the church I attended when I was in seminary, so I was very proud to see their name associated with this. They decided that this decision was unacceptable, that it wasn't okay to wait before replacing Andrew Jackson with Harriet Tubman, so they made a resolution. An artist named Dana Wall had created a stamp with Harriet Tubman's portrait. Hope Church decided that it would stamp every $20 bill collected in its offering plate. So only Tubman 20s are in circulation at their church. And the parishioners who count the collection said, "Funny, we've noticed this real uptick in $20 bills specifically ever since we started doing this." And they said proudly, "This is our little bit of rebellion." They're pushing back, refusing to wait any longer before overturning this pattern that says only white male politicians can symbolize the American experience. There's a lot at stake in who is on our currency. It says a lot about our values and about who counts as important with us. Which brings us to today's gospel, where Jesus is confronted by, Matthew tells us, the Pharisees with the Herodians and silences them with this action that he takes related to a coin. Our suspicion should be up right away when we start to read this passage, because this is a strange setup if we slow down to think about it. Pharisees and Herodians did not usually hang out together. The Pharisees were the self-appointed guardians of religiousness. They were very devout, sometimes, as we know, to the point of being purists about religion. And so they were critical of the Romans, who so disrespected the faith that they followed. The Herodians, meanwhile, are agents of the Roman Empire. They're political appointees and collaborators extraordinaire. Why would these two groups of people have been in each other's company, we should be asking? Well, just like today, we see this strange coexistence of people claiming to be devout Christians with right-wing politics, two things that really should have nothing to do with each other. These groups were prepared to form an alliance for their own purposes. And in this case, that shared interest was getting this troublemaker Jesus out of the way, because he challenged both of their authorities, both religious legalism and, of course, the politics of empire. And so these strange bedfellows joined forces to set up a trap to catch him. They take care to flatter him first. They say, "Teacher, we know you're a truthful man. You don't play favorites based on status." And then they ask Jesus, "So tell us, is it lawful to pay the census tax to Caesar or not?" This truly is a setup. Because if he answers no, if he says don't pay your taxes, then the Romans can place him under arrest. If he answers yes, pay the tax, then his spiritual credentials are undermined because he's shown that he's willing to compromise with the Roman system, so his own people will lose trust in his prophetic authority. Either way, he loses, or so the Pharisees and the Herodians imagine. But Jesus responds in this unexpected way. He asks that someone in the group produce a coin that would be used to pay the census tax. Right away, this tells us something important. Jesus asks for a coin to use in his demonstration, meaning he doesn't have one. He doesn't carry Roman currency. But his challengers do. Apparently, they have no problem whisking a coin like this out of their pocket. So now they're caught in their own trap. They've shown that they have bought into the Roman system, and Jesus has proven that he hasn't. Now Jesus asks a question about the image on the coin. "Whose likeness is this?" he says. And they answer, "Caesar's." And again, Jesus has become the person to lay the trap, because imprinted on Roman coins, beneath the engraving of the emperor, was his title, Caesar, son of the divine Augustus. For a Jew, this makes the picture a graven image. It divinizes the Roman leader. It presents as God someone other than God. So it's idolatry. It's a violation of the second commandment. Once again, the image on a coin becomes a revelation of people's values, their commitments, and who counts in their consciousness. So Jesus, without calling anyone out directly, implies that his critics have given ultimate allegiance to a dictator rather than God. Idolatry comes in many forms today. Unfortunately, we recognize all too well the tendency still to elevate authoritarian leaders to more than human status and to give them unquestioning allegiance. War is another false god, an idol that casts a shadow over our age. In the first 55 years of its nuclear program, the United States spent somewhere north of $5.5 trillion on nuclear weapons, and we're many years and many weapons further along that path now. If you assembled $5.5 trillion bills together in a stack, it would reach from the Earth to the Moon and back again, 459,000 miles. If the image of God is imprinted on every person, then war, any war, is idolatry, and we have to reckon with that. The self can easily become an idol, and not just through greedy and obviously self-interested behaviors, but in more harmless-seeming habits even, like catching ourselves feeling that we have to fix everything, or that we have to be the one to solve every problem, or neglecting our own wellness and health. A friend of mine who's also a priest told me about speaking with his spiritual director during his school years and asking how he or anyone in a helping profession, for that matter, could manage to take time to breathe, let alone set any boundaries, when there are endless legitimate needs of other people. His mentor replied, with advice that he's brought himself back to many times, and I have too. Remember, Jason, his spiritual director said, there is only one Savior, and it's not you. His ministry's gotten more honest and more healthy since committing those words to heart. In the mind of Jesus, we know that the guiding truth was that wonderful line spoken by the psalmist, the earth is God's and everything in it. Everything belongs to God. Render to God the things that are God's. For Jesus, that's all that is. What would it mean for us to act like we really believed this? What would it mean for how we treated other people? What would it mean for how we treated ourselves? Every empire, including the one we're living in, is vulnerable to this myth that some people count more than others. Some people get to represent humankind, and others do not. Against this stands the Jesus tradition and the belief that every human being is stamped with the image of God. Not some human beings, all. Black people, brown people, white people, people of every color. Women, men, trans and non-binary people. Palestinians and Israelis. All humans. Likewise, the earth is not disposable. It's not an object. It's a living organism that reveals God to us. How would we treat creation if we took this to heart? If we truly believed the earth doesn't belong to companies, to nations, to private owners of any kind. It belongs to God. Several years ago, a woman bought a painting that art dealers found to be unremarkable. She paid not much for it, stuck it in a dusty corner of her attic. Then it was discovered that it was a Van Gogh. And you can bet it wasn't stuck in the attic anymore. Nothing about it had been altered. It was the same painting it had always been. The only thing that had changed was knowing who created it. That shifted people's attitude entirely. And maybe you've had your own version of this experience where you come across some photo or book or object or throwaway thing, something that seemed disposable, until you find out that it belonged to your great-grandmother or your great-grandfather, or that some important person wrote their signature on it. And all of a sudden, it's transformed in your mind. You can't look at it the same way. You see it with more reverence. You touch it with more gentleness and respect. The earth and every person in it are the works of a great artist, God, the true and first creator. The earth and every person is worthy of our reverence and our gentleness because we know to whom they belong. The earth is God's and everything in it. What then truly belongs to Caesar? Not one thing.